coming up. The debut of Cleveland Browns Weekend with Vic Carucci. I promise it's here, right here on 92.3 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to the inaugural edition of Cleveland Browns Weekend. I'm Vic Carucci with you for a full hour of Browns discussion right here on 92.3 The Fan. And get used to this, we're going to be with you each Saturday morning in this slot to bring you the latest on what's going on in Berea. You're going to hear from key Browns newsmakers, from players, from coaches, front office people, alumni. You'll also hear from media types locally and nationally. We'll talk about the Browns, of course, but we'll also get you caught up on what's going on around the rest of the National Football League, around the rest of the AFC North. And in light of the fact that we're just coming off of the 2013 NFL Draft, that's going to be the focus of conversation on today's show. So you're going to hear directly from Browns general manager Mike Lombardi on why the Browns made the picks that they made, what the thinking was behind those trades of this year's fourth and fifth round draft picks for third and fourth rounders next year. How about that Steelers deal? As well as about the acquisition of wide receiver Devon Bess from Miami. Also, you're going to hear what former Browns quarterback Bernie Kosar thinks of this team's draft, along with perspective from Solomon Wilcots of NFL Network, which had the former NFL defensive back and teammate of Browns defensive coordinator Ray Horton, by the way, in Berea during the draft. And you'll get some thoughts from Mary Kay Cabot. She's the longtime Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So we're just getting this thing started. You're listening to the debut of Cleveland Browns Weekend. I'm Vic Carucci with you on 92.3 The Fan. And we'll get things kicked off with a conversation with former Browns quarterback Bernie Kosar, who has a whole lot of opinions about what the Browns did in the draft. Bernie, so much to talk about with this draft. I mean, a lot of second-guessing, frankly, going on, especially with those back-to-back trades in rounds 4 and 5. And I know that that's maybe taken over the conversation, but I want to back it up to the very beginning because I really haven't had your chance to weigh in on starting off with what this team did in round 1, going after Barkevious Mango, going after an athlete, a pass rusher who has all the speed, all the dynamics that I think, and we talked about this right up to the draft, that if they went in this direction, this would make sense. So I think right off the bat, predictable, sensible first-round pick.
Well, me and you have been talking for months, and especially the draft week, about our enjoyment or our like of the way getting our front seven to get after the opposing team's quarterback. And, you know, I see some people saying, well, we had that position taken care of with Kruger and Jabal Sheard. But, and that may be true, but to have a guy, you can't have enough pass rushers. And with Mingo being younger, being 240 pounds, with that athleticism, I think it's something that you need to do, it's good to do, be able to have guys that don't maybe have to play. He'll play, but doesn't have to carry the whole team, carry the whole boat, and has so much potential upside that it's something that, as a quarterback who's retired, who doesn't have to face that type of pass rush, it's something I think would be good to do.
Yeah, and I think from the standpoint of making sure that you've got enough people up front to get the job done, because there was this thought, okay, this would be a luxury pick. I don't see it that way, Bernie. As much as I think Jabal Sheard could make that transition from end to outside linebacker, it doesn't bother me to add another guy that you feel you know, even have more of a sense that he could be dynamic and he could make an impact. And he doesn't necessarily have to start off the bat or be an every down kind of player. I just would be happy to know that when you go to pass rush, you got Kruger coming off one side, you got this guy involved, and whoever else in the mix, including Sheard, tearing after the quarterback.
Absolutely. And again, with the long season and with the new system and with Ray Horton's creativity, it's something that having that type of depth to get after it is something that I think is really going to be taken advantage of and a real asset for the Cleveland Browns, and especially the defense.
So now we go to round 3, and they pick up Leon McFadden, a cornerback from San Diego State. Not the tallest guy, just over, I think, 5'9", but a very solid player. And you saw him when he came to Berea, a solid 193 pounds, just kind of thickly built kid. So I don't worry. I mean, I think the initial thought was, how is he going to handle the bigger receivers that he has to go against in the course of a season? That doesn't concern me. What I think is most important about this pick is that this is a very bright kid. This is a guy who, handling what will be a complicated Ray Horton defense, where the corner, where especially a rookie corner, is going to be put in a lot of bad situations with all that zone blitzing. I think it requires a sense of awareness, of instinct, of just basic smarts, which this kid has to handle. And I think if you put another rookie in there, or almost any corner in there, and this would include Joe Hayden, that first year of that defense, there are going to be struggles at the corner position. I think you help minimize that a little bit by bringing in a guy with a high level of IQ that I think McFadden has.
Well, I agree. Plus, taking it one step further, the way the NFL, and maybe life, is going, where and it's the same with Mingo from Belgrade, Florida, down here. It's imperative, at least to me, and I think the Bill Belichick model has shown this out over the last decade, that with guys at the top of your team, the top of the draft, the leadership in the locker room, those are the ones that end up getting the biggest contracts, having the biggest expectations. And I think it's imperative that those kind of guys are your leaders, your smart guys. And I'm not saying anybody on the team's not smart, but the guys who work out the most, who are the good guys on and off the field, they set the example, and you decrease the statistical thing of a failure because they have good character and the money and the NFL lifestyle and things of that nature and all the credit and all the people that come around don't affect guys who have that type of stability within their own, I think, personal character. And I think we saw that with our first and third round pick, because I know there's been a lot of talk about some of the stuff on the later round picks. That's actually when you speculate.
Yeah, and that is a perfect transition to where we're going to go next. Bernie Kosar is joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline. Let's talk about the final day of this draft, really, when this team shocked a lot of people by trading out of rounds 4 and rounds 5 to upgrade those picks for next year, getting the third rounder for round 4 of this year and the fourth rounder for the round 5 of this year, but doing that first deal with the Steelers. And that's the one that I think people are having the toughest time to come to grips with. It is a bold move. It is a truly stunning thing to make a deal like that in your division with the Steelers, no less. I mean, Bernie, what was your first reaction to that?
My first reaction, and I want to say this right so I don't have a lot of people and through the country don't call me for more interviews on this, but my first reaction was, why the heck did Mike Holmgren and them not do that last year when we had all those picks? So we could have had more like that. When we had all those picks last year, I was like praying that we would be able to do some of that. Again, I want to keep talking about Ozzie or Bill Belichick or the Harbaughs up in Frisco. But those teams, that's what they do to build draft picks for the future. And last year would have set up this year even better. It's a tough situation with the scouting department still there, a new upper-level management, and guys getting to know each other. And when you don't know each other and you haven't had the whole year plus of analyzing that level of players, and I'm not trying to minimize or be critical of guys to get picked later or sign as undrafted free agents. But the way the league's going, those are things that you need to hit diamonds in the rough. And if you haven't, you know, if you're not exactly on the same page and you don't know pretty much for sure, have a good feeling, I really think it's I like trading for picks, higher picks next year with it, when you have time to really analyze where you're at, what your needs are, and who the guys are you could pick. Because, heck, you could pick guys to pick guys, and we all could talk about them today and feel good about them, and then we cut them in August, and they're gone. You know, so you don't think you got a conviction of somebody who could make your team, but not only just make your team, be a productive player, because you want to make guys who could make plays for you. And if you don't have a solid conviction towards somebody, right now, I really like the idea of getting higher picks next year.
Yeah, I think this was the ultimate case of trusting your evaluations, of believing so much in how you have players rated, how you had them rated throughout the draft, but particularly when you get into this tricky area of the bottom half of the draft and say, are we really getting value here? Is someone that we pick in round four or round five going to help us this year, or are they just going to be kind of camp fodder? And I think when they came to that conclusion, they were confident in dealing away the pick and confident in allowing the Steelers to do what they did and immediately pounce on their choice and go ahead and take a safety. Here's the other thing, Bernie, that comes into this equation. You have to trust that as the people who are shaping this roster, putting this together, you have to trust what you know about what you already had in place. So they've had ample time, months, to study who was already here and who is already on this team. A lot of young players. I mean, players that are still in their developmental stages of their careers. Now, you could decide that, well, there's really not much help here, that the previous drafters or people who acquired talent in one form or another didn't do such a good job. I don't think that's the case. I think there's actually a sense that there was a good core young nucleus on this team that could be utilized. And that had to come into the thinking in saying we are not going to make picks this year in rounds four and five because we have guys available to us already who can fill those spots.
Well, again, and that's where we talked before the draft, before the mini camp, before the draft, and the mini camp right after the mini camp of the 3 or 4 days where the new staff had a chance and some of the new front office people to evaluate what they had as a team. And you know, and it's not evaluating Joe Hayden and guys like that. It's evaluating that level of players who are younger, who need to step their game up, raise it up, and make plays to see if they think they fit into offensive system of North Turner or defensive system of Ray Horton. And you have an idea, again, when you're not able to make contact and it's not physical, nothing's 100%. But you have to make those assumptions and those evaluations. And hey, even though they have had a few months to study and evaluate, in reality, football, you probably need more. So to not make picks for pick's sake, if you don't have a guy that you have in mind that fits into your system against what you have as players, you're probably better off to. And most teams don't go this way, except the good ones. So I'd rather have more picks than less next year when you have a whole year, not just 2 or 3 months to evaluate.
And how about the acquisition of Devon Bess, Bernie, a guy I know you know quite well. He played for the Dolphins. A slot guy who really fills a clear need in that position for this Browns offense.
Right. And, you know, I followed him a lot being down here in Florida and coming back and forth. He's made the most, again, another undrafted free agent, a guy who's, I think, averaging over 60-some catches, you know, the last year or two, from the slot primarily. And with some of the younger receivers we have outside with size, speed, and athleticism, being inside, doing that little tougher, grinding type stuff to dig out the first downs on third downs, I think something that gives us a lot of depth and an opportunity to kind of keep moving the sticks and allows you to take more chances on first and second down the field if you feel comfortable about your third down situation, especially in the slot receiver.
Bernie, great as always, and we will do this again next week, my friend.
Sounds good, bro.
You're listening to the debut of Cleveland Browns Weekend. I'm Vic Carucci with you on 92.3 The Fan.
Coming up, Mike Lombardi explains why the Browns drafted who they drafted right here on 92.3 The Fan.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Joining us now is Browns general manager Mike Lombardi after an extremely busy weekend, and the work I know is still not done, still in the throes of bringing aboard some undrafted free agents. But let's go back to the draft and your general big picture view of how things went. How close to or on the plan was everything that happened?
Well, I think it was important to add players that we felt like had the characteristics both on and off the field that could help the Browns as we build forward and move forward. And I think that was accomplished, along with trying to be proactive and looking over a larger portion of where we're going next year. You know, to walk out of the draft with good players and also have a third and a fourth round pick going into next year's draft are good assets to have as we kind of start to add more building blocks to the team.
And as you start with Barkevious Mingo, just looking at the type of player he is, it just seems like there's a chance right off the bat to have someone who can make an impact, even if he's not out there starting, and I'm sure that would be the first hope. But the type of athlete he is, the type of role he could play, those types of players, pass rushers with speed and athleticism, can really make a quick impact.
You know, along with Paul Kruger, who we signed, and Jabal Sheard, I think both those guys will add a dimension to our defense that we need. I think it's important to understand the NFL is about, you know, finding a way to stop the passer, and when you have rushers, that seems to be the best way. So Mingo, along with Sheard and along with Kruger, give us guys that we feel like can get after the passer, and Quinton Groves we've added that has done that before in the past. So I think it's a combination of all the factors.
When you studied Barkevious, what was the first thing or main thing that jumped out at you that really locked it into your collective mindset to make him the pick?
Well, I think he loves football. That's really important. He's passionate about football. He was relentless in his effort, whether it was accomplished in terms of finishing the play or making the play. He was after, I think, the football. His personality showed up on the field, which was really good. And then his athleticism showed up on the field. It's one thing to have really good athleticism in a workout. It's another thing to find it on the field. And I think Mingo has all the passion. He's the kind of person we want. And he has that combines into his being on the field playing.
Leon McFadden, an interesting guy for a lot of reasons. I think the thing that really jumps out at me is the football acumen, the intelligence, the instincts that he brings, because this is not an easy defense to play, especially for a cornerback, and it would seem to enhance his chances of making an impact as a rookie just because of what he's got above the shoulder pads.
Well, you know, it's hard as rookies to come in the league and start a corner, so that's a challenge that awaits him, but I think he does combine the instincts and the awareness to play the position. He was a receiver. He has really good hands, and he's had a lot of starts at San Diego State. When you're a four-year starter, you're collecting a lot of games and a lot of situations where you learn in a passing league where you can learn more about the concepts of the game. So, I mean, the challenge lies ahead of him, and, you know, he's going to have to play. He's got some competition with Chris Owens. So I think it's important that he comes in, learns the defense, and competes at the highest level.
To have those two deals that you made for future picks in rounds 4 and 5, I get the plan of trying to stockpile for next year, but as a general manager and as someone who I'm sure wants to bring players in and have that tangible guy in and see what he looks like, how tough was it for you to mentally kind of deal with that you didn't get players there this year?
Well, you know, I mean, they're all assets, and so we just basically keep collecting assets. And I think ultimately the draft is a collection of your assets. It's a way to, as Joe Banner has talked about, it's a way to build a team. It's not necessarily a way to collect talent, and I think that's what we're trying to do. And so the players that you pick have to be instrumental in helping you build a team, and having a 3 and a 4, they'll go a long way in helping us continue to build a team. So, you know, for one moment there is, you know, you can fill out your depth chart, but you also may not, that player may not actually fill it out and be the starter. So, you know, I think it's important that you set yourself up for the future, but most importantly, build a team.
Mike Lombardi, general manager of the Browns, joining us. And it was interesting, Joe Banner talked about this on Saturday, where he said the making a trade within the division, making this deal, this very unusual deal with the Steelers, just because it's been 40 some odd years since the last one was made between those teams, division rivals, that you don't have trepidation doing that. He doesn't, because you could look at the approach that if you can get the better of the deal against the divisional opponent, that puts you further ahead than against the non-division opponent. Explain some of that thinking too from your mindset, and before you went into that deal, was there still a deep breath taken saying, okay, we're going to do business with the Steelers?
No, I think, you know, when you're in the draft, you can't cut down, and you can't cut down teams you're willing to make trades with. And if it's the trade that works well for you, then you've got to make it. And I think Pittsburgh's worried about their team, and we're worried about our team, and we're just going to concentrate on making the Cleveland Browns better. Obviously, we know Pittsburgh has great historic franchise. They've won a lot of championships in the North, and we have to compete with that. And I think that's the challenge more than the significance of an individual trade.
And clearly, you know something about next year's draft. I mean, at least in general terms, about the kinds of players that will be there to give you the faith that having third and now fourth round picks that you wouldn't have had previously, to have those for next year's draft is a plus.
You know, I think the formula has proven out to work. I think the more picks you can collect, it gives you more assets in a draft where assets matter. So I think that's, Joe's done this in Philadelphia before to much success, and I think it's something that a lot of teams in the league copied and have had success doing, and I think it's something that's going to be part of the fabric of the Browns for a while.
And Mike, is part of the thinking too that you had some younger assets already in place here, that there were players who are extremely young on this team, extremely young team that was fielded last year, that that you can perhaps draw from and work into your plan going forward?
Well, you know, you make every decision based on a significance of the impact of that trade, and I think we felt like that trade really benefited us, so we made it without looking over the larger spectrum of the deal, and I think that's how you have to make all deals. I think when you go back to your depth chart before you make a deal, you probably won't make the right deal, and I think you kind of keep it separate. Then we made a deal we felt was worthwhile for our football team today and tomorrow.
When you talk about Jamar Slaughter, the safety from Notre Dame, and the Achilles injury that he has, when you make a choice like that, when you know the guy's got a serious medical thing, but you track it, and I, you know, he talks about being ready by training camp and so forth, what's most important, of course, is your medical read on this. How much, just discuss how that research is done and what allowed you to be comfortable with making that pick.
Well, Joe Sheehan, our trainer, does a great job. All the team doctors for the Browns do a great job of collecting the information, then sitting down, going over the information with us, and not only predicting whether the guy's going to be healthy today, is what kind of future he can have with this type of injury. So we did a lot of research on this injury. It's interesting in terms of other players in the league that have had this injury and seeing where they can go and where they come back from. And I think you'll see in last recent years there have been some NFL players that have had it and have maintained their level of play, maintained their level of speed. So it gives you some comfort along with the medical. So you try to do research on every single angle before you make a decision.
And the final phase, of course, of this rookie talent acquisition in the process of to get these undrafted guys, explain your and the organization's approach to that.
Well, you know, free agency is another way to add players to your team and to build your team, and I think you try to do that. We don't take the attitude that we're just trying to fill out our camp roster. I think we take the attitude that we're looking for players that can come in and give us a competitive camp, that have a chance to develop, and we're willing to develop them because time is important for our coaches. So that was the mentality after the draft. We were trying to find guys that could do that, and hopefully we did.
And a lot of discussion before this draft that the Browns might end up with a quarterback somewhere along the line. That wasn't the case. Was it ever something that really was a strong consideration, or did the way the board fall dictate any of that, or did your just analysis say there really wasn't a quarterback anywhere that we wanted to draft?
Well, you know, everything's value in the draft, Vic, as you know, and you know, the value has to meet the player, and we'll always do every single quarterback in every draft moving forward. I think it's important that you know the quarterbacks, whether you have Tom Brady or whether you have Peyton Manning. It's important you know every single quarterback that's coming out of college, because you're going to eventually play against them, and you better know their strengths and their weaknesses. And the only time to really study them up close and personal is when they're in college, and that's what we'll plan on doing.
And Joe Banner mentioned how this the collection of players overall has to be viewed, and assets like the picks, that Devon Bess has to be in this conversation. You acquire that receiver from Miami, and even though he's a veteran, he's part of this draft acquisition. Give me a sense of what you see in Devon, his skill set, and what he brings to the Browns.
Well, I think it's so easy to label Devon an inside receiver when you can really watch all the Miami tape last year, and he plays inside and outside. And he's been very productive, whether it was as a rookie coming out of the University of Hawaii, making the team as an undrafted free agent, to last year. So he's very productive with the ball in his hands. He makes tough catches. He goes inside and makes catches, so converts third down. So he'll have great opportunity here to show those talents, whether it's as an inside slot receiver or as an outside receiver. And I think he'll flourish. I mean, one thing about Bess, he's always risen to the challenge, and I think he will.
The number one thing you want from the player is the production, of course, Michael. But from the standpoint of this receiver group being so young, it seems too, that he fits the bill of the so-called veteran presence in the room?
Well, you know, that's always important, but I think with North Turner, a veteran presence in the room, and Rob Chudzinski is the head coach, a veteran presence in the room, I think we have veterans, you know. It's important that we have good leadership at all levels, and I think with Norv and certainly with Rob as the head coach, we'll be able to make sure that the players understand what has to be done, whether they've been in the league 1 year or 10 years.
Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks, Vic.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
And on with us on the Revel Wireless Hotline is Solomon Wilcots from NFL Network. The network assigned him to cover the Browns through the draft. So, Solomon, you were in Berea for that and took it all in, and I want your big picture thoughts on what the Browns did.
Well, it was very difficult to try to get a fix on what they might do, trying to get an understanding philosophically with the new regime, this new organization, what direction they want to head in and how they plan on getting there. I think their draft reflects more than anything, Vic, is the belief in some of the players that they inherited from the previous regime. Remember, last year the Browns were the youngest team in the National Football League. They had a ton of money under the salary cap, to which they spent some in free agency. But you can clearly see they want to build on some of the players that previously existed, whether it's Brandon Wheaton, whether it's Trent Richardson, whether it's Phil Taylor and Jabril Sheard, who I talked to Ray Horton, said they believe in him as an outside linebacker. So I don't think they felt like they had to really make drastic moves and put their stamp on their first draft in 2013, that they're going to allow this team of these young group of players they inherited to sort of play themselves out and see exactly what they can do over the next few years.
It's interesting that you brought up Jabril Sheard, because talking with Mike Lombardi yesterday, the Browns general manager on this show, he brought up Sheard's name as someone that is in the mix with this whole pass rush thing. When I talked about how they enhance it with the addition of Barkevious Mingo as a first rounder to go along with Paul Kruger, he promptly went to Jabril Sheard. So there is a confidence that Sheard can successfully make this transition from defensive end to outside linebacker.
There is no doubt about it. I talked to defensive coordinator Ray Horton. He said he likes Jabril Sheard. He likes the fact that the guy lost weight. He believes that he can make the transition to that outside linebacker position. He said that when they had Lamar Woodley, when he came out of Michigan, that the coaches at Michigan told the Pittsburgh Steelers, he won't be able to do it. You guys, if you draft him, he won't be able to stand up and drop and play pass coverage. And Ray Horton was clear. He says, Jabril Sheard is a better athlete than Lamar Woodley was when he came out of college. He said, so if Woodley can make the transition, then they have every confidence that Jabril Sheard will be able to do it. I thought it was a ringing endorsement from his defensive coordinator, who looks at him as a guy who's going to be a player in their system.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And the pursuit of needs in this draft continued after Mingo in the first round with the third round selection of Leon McFadden, the cornerback from San Diego State. Some wonder why they didn't go for someone like D. Milner earlier, and why perhaps that without a second-round pick, or at least acquiring a second-round pick to try to pursue someone that might have been given a higher grade than Leon McFadden had. But it looks like Leon McFadden is the right fit, even though he's just barely, I think he's under 5'10", 5'9", and change, solid 193 pounds. And I think, too, the other key, the big key, is the intelligence factor, the savvy, the instincts that he brings to it, because this is such a complicated defense, right, Solomon? And a corner, whether he's a Joe Hayden entering year four or a guy like Leon McFadden as a rookie, it's a challenge to be out there in this defense when you got so much zone blitzing and such going on.
Well, yeah, I came in as a rookie in 87 playing for Dick LeBeau, and the guy who kind of was assigned to sort of shepherd me and help me to even learn the defense and understand it was none other than Ray Horton, the defensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns. He's a very smart, sharp guy. And Ray played every position in that defense, in that secondary scheme. And when I talked to him about what kind of corners you're looking for, he said, in this defense, Solomon, we're not necessarily looking for the best man-to-man cover guy. This is a zone blitz. What we're looking for is someone who's versatile in talent,
who can play some zone, can play some man, who understands how to pattern read when wide receivers are coming down the field and you're on the 2x2 side. You need to be able to read both receivers, because what one does is going to tell you what the other guy is going to do, because the pattern combinations have to sync up. And that's what they're looking for. And he said the number one skill we're looking for is someone with superior ball skills. And when I went back and looked at it, this guy, Leon McFadden, fits all of those areas in terms of the criteria of what they're looking for. I know this, that when I talked to Ray Horton and I came away with the criteria of what he was looking for at the corner, I left that room saying, they're not taking D. Milliner. They're going to wait till later in the draft to get someone who's better suited for them. Maybe not best for another team, but for the Cleveland Browns and what they want to do. So I wasn't shocked when they took McFadden. I just didn't know who they were going to take. But as I did more study on McFadden, he seems to be a guy that has all of those skills that Ray Horton is looking for.
Appreciate the breakdown and the knowledge, Solomon, and we will talk to you with you again soon, my friend.
The AFC North is stronger than ever. I think it's a four-team race.
Well, I hope you're right about that, with one of the four being the Browns.
This is the new radio home of the Cleveland Browns. Kylie and Boone's weekday mornings and the station with the most local sports talk in Cleveland. This is 92.3 The Fan, WKRK-FM and HD1 Cleveland Heights, Cleveland.
Coming up, we are going to continue with Cleveland Browns Weekend.
This is Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Eric K. Cabot covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and she is joining us here on the Revel Wireless Hotline. Mary Kay, first, your overall thoughts on what the Browns did during this draft.
Well, first of all, with the first-round pick, Barkevious Mingo, you know, they set out to get a pass rusher. You and I have talked about that on the show before, and they went and got their pass rusher. Now, I'm sure they also liked Deion Jordan. Maybe they even liked Ziggy Ansah. Those two guys were unavailable. They went with the next best pass rusher, and some folks even had him ranked ahead of Deion Jordan, from what I was able to tell. So, you know, I think they did the right thing. As we had talked about before, I don't think either of us really felt that the cornerback in that situation was the right pick that high. You know, you really want to affect and disrupt the quarterback. So I liked what they did there. Then they came back. Obviously, you know, you have to consider Josh Gordon to be part of this. So Josh Gordon in the second round, you know, we all know he's got a year under his belt already and should make a big step up. Third round, you know, Leon McFadden, from everything I've heard and the people that I've talked to since the draft, they expect that he should be able to come in here and challenge for a starting job. He's got good ball skills. He's got great instincts. You know, he covers well. You know, so I do think that, you know, they filled a need with that pick. And then the rest of it, you know, I know some people have a problem with trading away the fourth and fifth round picks. I don't have a problem with that, because I can kind of look at the big picture here and see that, you know, if they don't love the way things work out with their quarterback situation this year, they have put themselves in a position to be able to package some picks and move up if they have to take a quarterback next year.
Now, that's a great perspective, because it does give you that ammunition to do different things. And I don't think you're right. I've heard the same reaction that a lot of people have had. Oh, gosh, why didn't they just pick players? This is a team that only won 5 games last year. They have to have need for players and bodies to go in there. But I think that's really taking a very short view of what the situation's all about. I think that, number one, what kind of players do you actually get in the fourth and fifth round? It doesn't mean that they're, you know, that they're invaluable picks. They are. But I think from the standpoint of what you pointed out, to back yourself up and give yourself an opportunity to do even more in 2014, when you know as a group making the decisions here, you're going to have a 2014 draft to deal with. Had this maybe been the previous group in charge and reaching a third year, or, you know, whatever it might be in your time with the team, and you're still you're still dealing with a losing record, then your philosophy is probably different. You're a little more desperate to do things. I think they can afford to be patient here.
Well, not only that, when you look to last year, and like you said, how many fourth and fifth rounders actually, not only do they sometimes not make the team, but how often do they actually become starters? When you look to last year and what Tom Hecker did, they used a fourth and fifth round pick as currency to move up to take a Trent Richardson, which, you know, nobody had a problem with that. I think people were very, very excited when they let those fourth and fifth round picks go. So it's the same kind of thing, but you don't see the result of it for a whole nother year. And not only that, not only did they use the fourth and fifth round picks as currency, they parlayed them into a third and fourth round pick. So, I mean, you really will be able to use these as, you know, great value, I think, when it comes time to take a look at these, you know, five or six really good quarterbacks that should be coming out next year.
The draft capital that the Browns have accumulated with the trades they made with the fourth and fifth rounders to Pittsburgh and Indy to get those upgraded picks in 2014 for the potential of packaging something if indeed they want to pursue a quarterback then. They didn't pursue a quarterback in this draft. There was a lot of speculation that might happen somewhere along the line. Do you think the fact that they didn't kind of puts to rest the notion that Brandon Whedon is really going to have any major challenge? I mean, Jason Campbell effectively is here to provide competition, but we saw Brandon had the first team reps through the offseason. He's number one in the depth chart in the offseason. Are we at a place where this is basically now going to be his job to lose?
You know what, that's what it seems like to me at this point. But I think the Browns have been very careful to leave the door open that if some, you know, that if something else came along, if another opportunity arose, that they're open to anything. But right now, for all intents and purposes, I think they're trying to say, Brandon's the guy, we're moving forward with him, we're going to see how this goes. You know, he needs to step it up. One thing that I've found throughout this whole entire offseason, no matter where I've gone, whether it's been to the NFL Combine, whether it's been to the NFL owners meetings, or anywhere else this offseason, everyone that I've talked to that knows North Turner has said the same thing to me. They have said he really likes Brandon Whedon. He genuinely likes him, is excited about him, and can't wait to get to work with him and see what he can do with that big arm. We saw what Rob Chudzinski was able to do in this similar type of offense with a Derek Anderson. And I just think that North likes Brandon, and that's going to help him.
Mary Kay, great stuff as always, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Vic.
Vic Carucci, thanking you so much for joining us for the debut of Cleveland Browns Weekend. Be sure to catch us at the same time next Saturday morning. And don't forget to check out my blog, Carucci's Call, presented by Revel Wireless, throughout the week on clevelandbrowns.com.